Hello everyone, welcome to the Laura Horn Art Podcast. This week we are continuing our conversation about sketchbooks. And I want to say a big thank you to everyone because we had a huge response to the first part of this sketchbook series. So in the first part we chatted about the mindset side of things, and today we are diving into the practical stuff. We'll be covering how to choose a sketchbook and talking about common challenges, including pages smearing, bleeding, tearing, and sticking together. And if this episode and last week's episode has you all pumped up and itching to make art in your own sketchbook, I'd love for you to come and join me in the Creative Elements Challenge. It's a free 5-part video series, which is all about developing your visual vocabulary of colours, marks, and imagery. I'll be sharing tips and exercises that are quick and easy to help you generate all sorts of material and ideas for your art. It's not about painting a finished painting. It's all about gathering those ingredients, things like colours, backgrounds, mark making, imagery, and compositions. We'll be working on all of that good stuff so that when you do go to paint, you've got all these helpers that are there for you. And we'll be recording the videos in my new home studio. So for those of you who have been listening along, you'll know that we recently moved house and we've been settling in. So this will be the first time that we've filmed something from the new space. So I'm very excited to share it with you, and it will be cozy and friendly. I want you to feel like I'm right there with you. So if you want to get involved, the challenge starts on the 10th of February and runs for 5 days only. It will only be available for a limited time. So if you want to join in, head on over to classes.laurahornart.com/courses/creative-elements-challenge. That's quite a long URL, so I will make sure that's in the show notes for this episode. It's a URL for my Teachable school, so that's why it's so long. but I'll make sure it's very easy for you to join up and be a part of this challenge. So that's all I'm going to say for now about the challenge. Let's get back into today's podcast. But before we get started, I want to share our review of the week. So the review is called So Amazing, Just Great. This podcast has everything: the motivational speeches, the business tips, the interviews, the art and painting tips. The list just keeps going. Laura and Richie are so transparent about everything, and it feels like I am actually there, hearing the conversation. I love hearing the two points of views with both Laura and Richie. Even though I am a digital artist, this podcast still is so helpful and inspiring, and it makes me want to dive into painting and mixed media. This is the Everything Art and Business podcast, and I think all artists should listen to it. Thank you so much for that review, and I love the fact that our podcast is reaching all kinds of different artists. That's something that I hoped for. I know that we talk about painting and mixed media a lot, but many of the subjects and topics that can come up are very broad and can be applied to all kinds of creative businesses and creative life in general. So let's get into today's conversation about the practical side of sketchbooks.
Hello, Laura. How are you going?
I'm very well. I'm feeling kind of calm and relaxed, which is strange. This is the second week of the kids being back at school. And yesterday I spent the whole day kind of having a bit of a reset and sorting everything out. And when I say that, what I mean is I had my to-do list and I was doing all the boring stuff, basically, you know, changing bedding, towels, putting all the dates from the school diary into my calendar. I like to start the year with good intentions. By the end of the year, it's totally, we're all over the place and chasing our tails. But at the beginning of the year, I'm a different person. Yeah.
It's just like when you write on the first page of a new copybook, you always write your neatest.
Yeah.
And then by the time you get halfway through, it's just scribbles.
Yes. Well, I'm at the stage of the year of neat Laura, trying to kind of hold all the balls in the air.
New year, new me.
Yep. Every year I go in that direction. But we'll see how long it sticks. And I wanted to mention it because I think as a creative business owner, it's very beneficial every now and then to just have a day where you get everything in order. And that might not necessarily be on the business side of things. It might just be getting your personal life in order and booking haircuts and dental visits and just getting some of that stuff sorted, especially at the beginning of the year with kids, because I know that I am being inundated at the moment with notes, sign this, swimming day next week and all that sort of stuff. And it makes you so much more calmer when you have a little bit of a sense that you have a handle on it.
And it also leaves room for when you have to run and bring them their school uniform or they forget their shoes, or like if you have what needs to be organized, then you have room for the little hiccups that will inevitably happen.
Yes, you leave a bit of space for those sorts of emergency situations, which we seem to have had more of than usual in the last week or so with our daughter heading into high school.
Well, we've given her more freedom.
How's that gone?
It's not going really well at all.
We feel needed anyway, don't we?
Yeah.
Because we've had all the phone calls and the mom, we need this and I need that and I forgot this and can you bring this to the school? Mm-hmm. And yeah, a learning curve for her.
Yeah, because she's very independent and she wants to do it all herself. So yeah, it's good because we do this for a living. So we're both around when she rings to say, I forgot my gym shorts. And we have to bring them up to her. So, yeah, I'm enjoying it, you know, even though I get grumpy.
You enjoy that too,
yeah.
The grumpy dad.
Yes.
Anyway, let's get into today's topic. And we're talking about sketchbooks. And I just remembered how our last podcast ended. You are so sneaky.
Yeah. Sex books.
The sex book conversation. Yes. If you have no idea what we are talking about, Richie snuck in a little blooper at the end of last week's episode where I got my words mixed up and then had a hysterical fit of the giggles. And quite often people say that I giggle a lot in the podcast. Well, this will show you how much I actually can giggle, because I lost it, didn't I?
Yeah, and there's so many times when I say to you, I'm definitely leaving this in, and then I don't. That time there was no way I wasn't putting that at the end.
And I feel like we're also getting more and more relaxed the more podcast episodes that we do, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And it goes to show that it takes time, because this is episode number 119. So if you're just getting started out with something and it feels a little bit awkward, just know, you know, hang in there, you'll get there.
Yeah, and more comfortable, not just more comfortable talking or used to having a microphone in your face, but more comfortable with what you leave in.
Yeah, I used to be more shy about leaving in some of those personal moments.
Yeah.
And now I've got to the stage where I feel more comfortable. And part of that is, or a huge part of that is, all the lovely comments and messages and support that we get that encourages us to be more of us.
Yeah.
Which I can't thank everyone enough, because it's helped me a lot on my own sort of personal confidence journey. So let's talk about sketchbooks, because I'm almost getting emotional thinking about that, thinking about just how far I've come.
Yeah. You said episode 119.
Yeah.
That's not 1 to 119. That's 119 weeks.
Yeah.
That's a long time.
I can still remember the first time that you put a podcast mic in my face, and I'm pretty sure I was all sweaty from the gym, and
yeah,
I was like, are we really doing this? Yeah.
And the funny thing is, I'd bought the stuff way before then. I had it in I think it was in one of the cupboards where we keep the first aid stuff. So every time you'd have a headache or every time you'd go to get something out of the first aid kit, there'd be all these wires and microphones and a recorder just looking at you. Until eventually, I can't even remember what tipped us over the edge. I remembered I never really pushed you. I always just told you or suggested that it would be a really good idea for you to do a podcast. And it's always the same, isn't it? Like, it's always the doubt. What do I have to offer? Who would want to listen to me? Am I good enough? What if people judge me? There is so much going against you when you, A, don't want to have a podcast, but someone else thinks you should. Like, this wasn't your idea. This was almost like put on you. And by God, it's really, really worked out.
Well, when we recorded the first episode, part of me did that just to appease you. And I never thought that it would see the light of day. I was like, oh, I'll just do a few of these and then we'll just, it'll just fizzle out and I'll get back to all the other things that I do. So I wasn't really thinking about it all that deeply when we did it. I didn't plan it. We didn't have a strategy or an approach with it. It's actually been very organic, which is wonderful.
And I love it because even though it tracks very well and it charts well in the visual arts category, we don't have sponsorship. We don't have advertisers. We don't have obligations other than that we really like doing this because people really enjoy it. And that sounds crazy because, to me anyway, because my ego is like, this is amazing. Whereas when I really sit down and think about it, it's not even for us. Does that make sense? Like we do this chat and we put it out there and thousands of people listen to it and thousands of people enjoy it.
Yeah. And I agree with you. When we get the messages and the reviews and things like that, it motivates us because we realize that it is making an impact on people's lives. And we've had some incredible messages of hope for people, you know, encouragement that they've got from the podcast. Yeah, that's enough for us to keep chugging along and we enjoy it. And it brings us together too, you and me just chatting and we're at our kitchen table at the moment. We've been podcasting at home again. So it's extra cozy and comfortable here.
Yeah. And as cliche as it sounds, you know, it's like people get the benefit of this. And it's almost like the one time in your week where you're just totally open and honest, yet thousands of people are going to listen to you.
I think part of the trick to it all is that you don't think about that part of it. The fact that it's going out to thousands of people, that you just think about those people that you know are really close. Like I just sort of imagine a few friends around the table and that's it. So anyway, I think we should get on to our topic, shouldn't we? We seem to be going down memory lane and reminiscing and having a moment, but it feels apt because this last week I received over on my Instagram so much podcast love, like just so many messages. And I wanted to thank everyone for that. So in relation to sketchbooks, this is another meaty topic because there are so many different types of sketchbooks and approaches. And it goes without saying that it's very personal. There's no right or wrong with this. And mostly I'll be sharing from my own experience. Because when you choose a sketchbook, there are many factors to take into account, and it takes a lot of experimenting to find that sketchbook that feels right for you and the one that you want to create in. And I do think it makes a difference that, you know, trying out different sketchbooks. I don't want to put too much emphasis on materials and supplies because sometimes we can get into that mindset where, oh, if I have the perfect sketchbook, I'll make the perfect art. You know all about that with photography.
We spoke about it 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, so I don't want to emphasize the supplies too much. But when I reflect on my personal experience, I have found that when I find a sketchbook that I really love, I want to keep working in it and go back to it. And some of the factors that I have tried out and experimented with are different sizes. So the layout can have quite a big impact. Some sketchbooks come in A4 portrait size, some are landscape, and most recently I've been using a sketchbook that is square. And I've been enjoying the square size. It feels a bit like the best of both worlds in a way and offers a lot of versatility. So I'll start the podcast by saying the sketchbook that I'm using at the moment, because I think it's the most asked question that I am getting on my Instagram and through my DMs. And I try and mention it in my Instagram posts from time to time. The one that I am using at the moment, and you'll see it over on Instagram, is made by the Handbook Journal Company, and it's a square format. It's called a watercolor travelogue journal or something along those lines. I'll link it in the show notes for this episode. It has a linen cover, which I really like. It's a light creamy color, and the paper in it is 200 GSM, so it's a reasonable weight. It's not 100% cotton, most journals aren't, but it is a good quality paper. I'll get into some of those factors a little bit more as we go on, but I just wanted to get that out of the way. That's the one that I've been using. So some of the factors are, I mentioned size, the type of paper that's in the sketchbook, and the quality of the paper. You know, and when it comes down to the type of paper, it's, you know, is it watercolor paper? Is it mixed media paper? Is it cartridge paper? Is it white or is it a creamy color? Is it rough? Is it smooth? There's all sorts of things. The binding, some journals come with a ring binder, so you can open up the journal completely flat in front of you. And some journals are stitched together, which makes them a little bit harder to open up completely flat. So you might need to use something like a bulldog clip. You've seen me do that, where I clip the side of my journal to hold the pages flat. Another thing that I do is tape my journal down and I create a border so that I have that nice white border. But I also tape the tape to the table, and that helps hold the journal down as well. Affordability is a big one, because there's a huge range and some journals are quite expensive. So you can pick up a journal that might be $10, $20 right through to $100. So depending on what you are comfortable with will definitely impact upon your decision. Generally speaking, you get what you pay for, but you need to consider what's your purpose and whether or not you want to be using very expensive paper for the type of art that you want to make. So I'm going to run through some of the journals that I've used and talk about the pros and cons. So when I first started, I began with the, the spiral bound journals that open up flat and they're relatively affordable. So a couple of common ones are the Strathmore Visual Arts Journal, and then there's also the Canson Mixed Media Extra Large Journal, or XL Journal. I think it's for extra large.
XL.
I'm not sure. So I used these when I was first starting out, so quite a few years ago now. The paper is more of a student grade paper, and it will sort of buckle and warp a bit more than your more artist quality premium journals. And so once I started to get more confident with my watercolor and things like that, I moved out of this type of journal and into the next level up, which I'll talk about. But I still think it would be valuable to have one of these journals, particularly if you are a beginner and just getting started, because you don't want to be worried about how much you're spending on pages when you're just experimenting. And also, it would be a good journal to have for supplementary work like swatching, collage, compositions, things like that. So if you listen to last week's journal, I talked about how I often have two journals by my side, and I might have my scrappy journal and my fancy journal. So I would use this one for more of my scrappy type of stuff. So these are great. Highly recommend them for getting started. Good, affordable option.
Even if you can afford the really expensive stuff, it's good to have something that you can psychologically doodle in and wreck, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, absolutely. And even exercise books or composition books, which I'll talk about in a minute, you could use something that's even more affordable. It has that benefit of you being able to fully let go and bring some freedom into your art. One of the things that I'm not so keen on with these journals is the spiral bound layout. For some reason, I'm not sure if I'm particularly rough with things. There is that possibility. But I always seem to break the spiral in them and they get a little bit destroyed. You know, the pages sometimes start to come out and I just find that that type of journal seems to fall apart for me. I also prefer journals where I can open up the journal spread, have it flat, and I don't have a gap in the page. So I quite like working on a two-page spread where I use both sides of the book to create one painting, and you can't really do that with a spiral bound. So that's something to consider. Some people love the spiral bound because there's a lot of room. You can have thicker pages, it's easier to open. So there are benefits and there are, I guess, cons depending on which way you look at it. So once I had been working in these more affordable journals for a while, I felt like I was ready to take the next step. And I had a look out, you know, in the community to see what artists were using. And there was one brand that seemed to come up again and again and again, and it was Moleskine. Have you heard of Moleskine?
No.
Okay.
Have I ever heard you say Moleskine?
Moleskine journals.
Every week.
So this brand is very popular and for very good reason. They create a huge range of journals. Now, some of those journals have paper in it that's more suited to sketching and drawing. It won't handle wet media, but there are journals that have watercolor paper in them. And because of the type of art that I make, I like to use those journals that will handle watercolor, acrylic and collage and all the things that I throw at it. So there's watercolor notebooks in various sizes. There's a quirky little landscape size, which I often use. I based one of my classes in that. So my watercolor explorations class, I use that journal to do little watercolor studies. So that was the one that I got started with. And I enjoy the paper in that journal. It's got a really nice cold press. It's a little bit rough, but not overly textured paper. It does warp a little bit. I find with most of my journals, the pages buckle more so than a piece of loose paper. But I don't worry about that because it's a journal. I kind of like that, you know, crumply feel. And I find that the pages flatten out a bit over time. You can always put some heavy books and flatten things down if you want to. For me, it's not a big deal. If it's a really big deal to you, then you might want to look at a very premium journal that has paper in it that is 100% cotton, but you're going to be looking at a pretty hefty price tag for a journal like that. And my feeling on that is if I'm going to use paper of that quality, then I may as well use something like Archer's in a pad and use loose sheets. So I don't tend to go there because I keep my journals for that kind of more mid-range work, but it is an option.
100% cotton, that's the kind of paper we use for printing. It's expensive.
Yeah, 100% cotton paper is expensive. There are advantages to it when you are using things like watercolor. I use 100% cotton for the artwork that I sell when I do original pieces. I use either Archer's paper or I use Canson Heritage. The paper doesn't warp as much. It also allows you to blend and layer more easily. The paper stays wet a bit longer. Colors tend to be more vibrant. There are many little benefits to using that kind of paper, but I still find that the paper in Moleskine watercolor notebooks and the handbook journal that I mentioned earlier, the paper is still very good. You can do a lot with it. The paper in those two journals is actually quite similar. The Moleskine is a little bit creamier in color, so if you prefer a whiter, brighter paper, you might like the handbook journal a bit more. But other than that, I find them quite similar. So there is a very premium luxe journal that I haven't tried. It's called the Perfect Sketchbook. Interesting name. Mm-hmm. And this one is made by a company called Etchr. ETCHR. It has 300 GSM, so a heavyweight 100% cotton watercolor paper in it. So it'd be similar to working in something like Arches. I had a look, and an A4 journal of this brand is $100 in Australian plus postage. So that's a very expensive journal.
So is that the perfect sketchbook?
Yeah.
So what's a perfect before you paint in it, or is it perfect when you're finished with it?
Who knows? I've heard very good things about it, but I have no experience in it. So I'm very curious if anyone else has tried it. So what are some other options? You could make your own journal. I absolutely love handmade journals. You can put all sorts of different types of paper in them. So you could have watercolor paper plus some cartridge paper, old book pages, coffee dyed papers, things like that. So I have a beautiful journal made by Wendy Silganic, and you can find Wendy over on Instagram at willa.wonders, and she's got a very inspiring feed. If you're interested in making your own journal, I definitely recommend that you go and check it out, willa.wonders. So that's willa.wanders. Another option is to use a vintage book. So you could go to a charity store, a thrift shop, and hunt down some books. This is a gorgeous way to make art. You can choose a book and then use that as your substrate. Keep in mind that you'll need to look for a book that's going to work well. So you want one that has a stitched binding rather than glued, because if you start adding in water and things like paint and fluid mediums, your glue is going to break down and then your pages fall out. So you want a book with a stitched binding, and have a look at the paper. I particularly like using paper that is a little bit thicker and matte, because it's easier to adhere things to a matte surface. But keep in mind, you can always prepare your pages and use gesso. If you use gesso, then it's easier to apply paint and other things over the top. So it's like a primer. And I particularly like clear gesso. It has it's clear, so you can see the writing through. So if you wanted to incorporate some found words or even some of the illustrations in a book and use that as part of your artwork, you can do that by using a clear gesso. It also has an interesting rough surface to work on, and that surface is particularly good for then coming over the top with things like pencils and pens and adding details in. You can also use white gesso or black gesso, or even just prep it with acrylic paint. Use acrylic paint to get something down on the surface. If the pages are particularly thin, you can glue pages together and use a gel medium to glue those pages together to create a more sturdy surface. Depending on the type of art that you make, if you do a lot of collage and you bulk out your pages, you may need to remove some of the pages from the book. Otherwise, the book's going to get too fat and your binding will break as well. So that's another thing that you might need to do when using a vintage book. And generally what people call them are altered books. So you alter the book in order to turn it into a journal. And with this process, gesso is your friend. Gesso is going to help you to paint the cover if you want to, or to use those pages for all sorts of different things. And similar to using secondhand books, you could also use a very cheap, affordable book that you pick up from a news agency. And one that I like to suggest is a composition book. And the reason for that is because they have a stitched binding, but it is an exercise book. So when you open it up, you'll feel like you're back at school. It's got lines in it, but it's something that you can use without worrying at all, because they're super affordable and you can slap some gesso down, or you can use pen and drawing. And it's a quick, easy way to make one of those journals that you feel very free in. So we've talked about choosing a journal, and there's many, many options. But once you have a journal that you're ready to work with, and then you come up against a few challenges. And I hear about these sorts of things all the time, so I want to run through them and offer up some tips. So the first one is when you work on one page and then you flip it over and you go to work on the other side of that same page, but you've got things bleeding through. So pen, paint, whatever. And so you've already got an imperfect surface. So with that, you can approach that in a few different ways. First of all, have a look at what type of journal you are using. If you are using something that is of a higher quality, that has a thicker page, so maybe a 200 GSM watercolor paper or a mixed media paper, you're not going to get as much of this. It's not something that I tend to grapple with too much with the journals that I use, but if you are using a cheaper composition notebook, maybe an altered book, handmade journal or a student-made journal, you may have this happen. So you can definitely work with it. Last week I mentioned that collage can save anything. So you could collage over the top of it and give yourself a new surface, or you could cover it up maybe with a heavy-bodied opaque acrylic paint and then keep layering over the top, so keep layering. Or you could change your journal, so you could look at that and go, well, maybe that's not the journal for me for the type of work that I'm doing, and upgrade your journal. Or have a look at your supplies that you are using. There are certain supplies that are going to bleed through a lot more. I don't tend to use them so much. So things like alcohol markers, oil-based paint pens, and things like that are more likely to bleed through. So I don't tend to use them. I use water-based paint pens and markers. Another gap or area where things can slip through is where you have your binding in the page. So down the sort of center where the stitching is. Sometimes if I'm using very fluid paints, like fluid acrylics, I will find that that soaks through into the next page or the page underneath. So just be mindful of putting like big puddles of paint in the center.
Well, it doesn't soak through. It gets through the perforation.
Yes,
from
that's
the
right.
Stitch.
Yes, yeah. It's not soaking through. It's getting through the holes. Mm. So just keep in mind that when you have a stitched binding, you have little holes there where the string goes through, where it's stitched, and that can provide an access point for paint to soak into the page underneath. So try and avoid big puddles in the middle, or else, again, just work with it. Just embrace the imperfection of your journal.
Happy accidents.
Happy accidents, yeah. Buckling. So most journals do buckle a little bit. They don't have that heavy 100% cotton paper. They're a little bit lighter weight, and buckling is inevitable, especially if you are throwing a lot of different types of media at the page. So you have some media that's very loose and fluid, and you have some areas that are very dry, and you have that difference in the surface. So that's inevitable in a way. I tend to just use a ball clip to hold things as flat as possible, a bulldog clip, or tape my pages down, or else, you know, load things up on my sketchbook when the page is dry to smooth things out. But most of the time I just run with it. So I don't have any sort of big tip with that other than just embrace those bumps and curves. But again, the quality of the paper does make a difference. So it is on a spectrum, and if you're using a moleskin or the handbook journal that I mentioned, you're not going to get too much.
Some of your sketchbooks have heavy covers, and they also have an elastic band built into them. So when you close your book and you wrap it up in the band, they tend to flatten out.
They do tend to flatten out over time, and I do find that my acrylic pages get quite flat, particularly once I've layered a few layers on. So maybe the first layer, there might be a little bit of a buckle if I go in particularly with like a loose wash or something like that. But then as I layer more heavier bodied acrylics, it starts to settle down and flatten out. And then when I close it, put the elastic band around again, it flattens a bit more. So over time, they sort themselves out. Smearing. So sometimes you get supplies that smear on the page and you didn't intend it to. So you might think you're finished and you go and you add maybe a varnish over the top or a matte medium or something like that to seal your work, and then, oh no, big kind of line or smudge in the page. And this is because you have water-soluble supplies in your work, and when you apply something like a gel medium to seal your work, that activates the water in that supply. So it's something to be mindful of. So water-soluble supplies include things like the Neocolor 2 pastels that I often use are water soluble. I have some oil pastels by the Portfolio brand. They are water soluble, so they will smudge a little bit. Stabilo All Pencil is water soluble. Things like watercolor and gouache, they do reactivate with water. So there's all sorts of supplies that can be reactivated when you are sealing your work or even if you're just layering over the top. You can use a fixative if you want to in between layers, so a workable fixative. You can spray that over the top to seal in your soluble materials. Krylon makes a good one. Winsor & Newton makes a good one. A workable fixative means that you can apply the fixative and you can then continue working. So it's not a final varnish. So just remember that. So you can do that to help keep things from smearing and smudging. Sometimes I seal things using matte medium and it does reactivate them a little bit, but something like an oil pastel, sometimes I add a little bit of matte medium over the top, just on the mark with a paintbrush, a tiny little paintbrush, and it seals it in. This isn't something that I would necessarily do in a piece of art that I was going to sell, like a loose sheet of paper, but I do it in my sketchbook. So I add a little bit of matte medium over the top of my oil pastels so that I don't have those sticky oil pastel marks in my sketchbook, because they will smear and they will stick and cause your pages to kind of stick together. Which leads me to the next one, pages sticking together. So this is another one that comes up a lot with journals, is that you finish your work and you feel like it's dry, feels very dry to the touch, you've left it overnight. You then close your book thinking, oh, I'll flatten the pages out now. I'll add that elastic little binder thing on the book so everything's nice and flat. And that presses the pages together firmly. And then when you go to open, you hear that noise, rip. And your beautiful masterpiece gets ripped. And it's discouraging, and particularly if you spend a long time on a page. That can be a grumpy painting day. We talk about them a lot, but yes, that can lead
I'm
to...
I'm looking at the pain in your eyes.
That can lead to Laura's failure face when you come home. So we want to prevent pages from sticking together. So I want to run through some tips on that. The first thing is to avoid glossy supplies in your sketchbook. So these are the biggest culprit when it comes to pages sticking together. So glossy paints... Gloss gel medium is a particularly bad one. So if you're using gel medium to glue pieces into your sketchbook, or you're using a glazing fluid or something like that, I would suggest with your mediums to use matte versions of those mediums, because you won't have nearly as many problems. So stay away from the really glossy supplies. Another factor is letting it fully dry might take more than a day. You know, letting your pages dry for a few days. That is something that can help. I find that when I use my golden acrylic paints, and I tend to use a fair few opaque colors, or I add in some titanium white, so I have some opaque colors, and I find that they don't tend to stick. So I don't have too much of a problem. Golden has also got a matte range of paints, and that's something that you could look at, is using paints in your sketchbook that are more of a matte type of paint. And many brands do have matte versions. I'm just trying to think what would be good.
Now, you just said that the matte doesn't stick. Are you saying that it dries quicker and it doesn't stick after a day? Or are you saying that you can close your book pretty much straight away and it won't stick?
Well, I'd always recommend leaving your book open the night, overnight. So work on your page and then let it dry. I think it's a good idea to give most paints that sort of 24 hours. But if you're using a matte paint, after that, you should be able to just close your book fairly easily and not have any problems and not need to do anything else. So there are craft paints are fairly matte. Gouache paint has a matte texture, so it is well suited to using in journals and sketchbooks. Maybe I do need to get gouache.
You already have two gouaches.
Yeah, but there's hundreds of gouache paint colours. We will see. I had a recommendation come through that Turner's is a really good brand of gouache to try. It's on my wish list now, but I might need to wait a year. going to see if I can, because I said I wasn't going to buy gouache this year.
That was last year.
No, that was like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I know, but it's the 1st of February. So,
well, anyway,
that means
for anyone following along with my gouache adventure that hasn't happened yet, I'm still holding out. I haven't purchased gouache yet.
You're so buying gouache.
But I feel like gouache would be really good paint for sketchbooks and journals.
You better buy it.
It's matte.
Mm-hmm.
It's that kind of chalkier consistency, texture. Moving on. So matte paints are good. Stay away from the high gloss sticky stuff. If you do have some sticky things in your sketchbook, then the best thing to do is seal your page with wax. But you can only do this when you are completely finished your painting, because you can't put any paint and things like that over the top of the wax once you've put it on. It gives a lovely finish. It's fun to apply. And the product that I use is Dorland's wax medium, but you could use any kind of wax medium that you can find. And all you do is you take a little bit of it out of the tub and you buff it in with a cloth. So you need to be careful if you have any water-soluble supplies. You need to make sure that they are fixed beforehand, or just be aware that it could smudge if you're buffing into the page. But that will definitely seal your page and you won't have the problem of pages sticking together. If you are still working on a page, which for me is quite often the case because I don't know when a page is finished and I like to sort of sit with it for a few days, I tend to put wax paper in between my journal. So that can get a little bit kind of cumbersome and messy because you have all these little bits of paper in your journal, but it's a good preventative tip to make sure that you don't have that sticking. And then once you are sure that the page is complete, then you can actually just apply a wax from a candle if you want to. That's, I guess, a bit of a hack, but I don't tend to do that. I use the wax medium, but the idea is just to seal it with wax. So you can actually use a candle if you want to for your wax. That's the cheap kind of affordable version, a white candle. And what you do is you just rub the candle on your page to get some of the wax off the candle onto the page, and then you heat that up with a hairdryer or a heat gun so that it gets a little bit more workable, and then you buff it in with a cloth just in the same way that you would medium out of a tub. So that's an option. I haven't actually tried it because I have the wax medium, but I have heard that that works, so you could try that if you don't have anything else to hand. So I just wanted to finish by running through some of my favourite supplies that I like to use in my journals, because when I put out the Instagram post with questions, I had a lot of questions around dealing with these challenges, but also many questions about what do I use in my journals. So I want to run through how I have things set up. The first thing that I would suggest is having a bit of a journal kit, having your supplies close to you, easy to access. And you can set up a little corner in your home just for journaling, or on your kitchen table, maybe use like a portable caddy or something like that where you can put all your supplies in. Whatever it is, make it easy. In my space, I have a tray. It's like a cutlery tray from IKEA, and that's what I use to make sure that I have all my mixed media supplies out there and easy to grab. And it's divided into sections, which makes it perfect. I'll quickly run through what I have in there. So in my tray, I have my watercolors. So I mostly use Daniel Smith, but they are a fairly expensive brand. And I think for journals, you know, this is where you can definitely look at some of the student grade options. Winsor & Newton have an excellent range. So does Van Gogh, Royal Talons Van Gogh. There's all sorts of good quality mid-range watercolors that are perfect for journals. Or you could have gouache, hint, hint. And because I like to work in mixed media, I also have a set of acrylic paints. So I have some tubes of golden paints I've been using at the moment. They've been working really well in my journals. Matte medium for gluing things down. So a matte gel medium, I use the golden brand. I then have a selection of water soluble supplies. So I mentioned a couple of them earlier, but I really like the Caran d'Ache Neocolor 2 crayons. I also have some watercolor pencils. I'm trying to think what brand they are. I'm not sure. I think I have the Derwent Inktense pencils.
You're looking at me like I would know.
Yeah, I know. I'm squinting and I'm looking at you. We'll run with that. And then I have pens. So I have Micron pens. They're the black pens that I use, and they come in a whole lot of different thicknesses. So I have a pack of those, so they have all the different types. And then I have my Posca paint pens. Everyone always asks me about what pen do I use for the white line work in my paintings. These days, I'm pretty much exclusively using Posca paint pens. I use the water-based pens, and I like the extra fine tip. So the very fine ones are the ones that I use the most. And then I do have a few of the thicker ones, and I use those more for mark making. And I like the ivory. There's also beige. I like those colors, and the gold. I use white, ivory, beige, and gold the most in my work. I actually don't really use the colors, just those ones. Collage papers. I have all sorts of different papers, book pages, rice paper, anything that I collect. I have by my side. I often make my own papers. If you want to know more about that process, there is a free class called Abstract Collage Creations over on my website, where I go through making a whole lot of collage papers and mark making, and so you can check that out. Wax paper and wax medium I have for sealing my pages and making sure they don't stick together. A variety of brushes. I have mixed media brushes and watercolor brushes. Usually I use Princeton. If you're ever looking for brushes, Princeton have an amazing range with all sorts of different price points. I use their watercolor brushes and I use their mixed media acrylic kind of brushes. I have them all actually. They have some great value sets too. Catalyst blades are great. They are also made by Princeton and they are made from silicon, and you can use them to quickly get paint onto the page and smear it around and get some really cool effects. And they also have textural tools if you're using heavier bodied supplies, although I also use them for watercolor. You know, the ones I'm talking about, they have the rubber ends on them and the big wooden handles. They're very useful, but of course you can always make your own kinds of tools like that. You can use things like a comb or a feather, or you could use a credit card to have that kind of palette knife effect. So you could hunt around the home and find all sorts of things just in your kitchen. And finally, I like to have a palette ready for me. So quite often when I'm working in a journal, I'll just use palette paper because it's quick, easy, and convenient. And I'll have my water container, which could be a yogurt tub or a glass jar, by my side. And if I want to set myself up for success, sounds all very serious. And this is a personality thing too. Sometimes I get my palette and my water containers ready for the night before. Shock horror. But I actually fill up my jars of water and I put them on my table where I'm going to make my mess, my journal and my palette. And I just set it up the night before. This is just one of the best things you can do, because when you walk past, it's ready for you to jump in. It's kind of like being a school kid and laying out your clothes for high school or primary school the night before. Like mom and dad, they had a good idea there mm-hmm. with that. It's, it sets you up, like you're making it easy to jump right in. So if that appeals to you, which it may or may not, you might want to just get yourself ready and organized. Take a bit of time to get that IKEA tray. Well, it doesn't have to be an IKEA tray, but whatever it is that you use, baskets, tins, get your supplies organized, lay your journal out, have a spread ready, water containers there, and then when you wake up the next day, you're ready to go. So on that note, I think that's the perfect place to end our sketchbook conversation. I will get it right this time. I hope that you've enjoyed hearing how I approach my sketchbooks, both from the mindset side of things, but also the practical stuff. If you haven't listened to last week's episode, make sure you check it out. It's episode number 118, and I'll link it in the show notes. You can find the show notes for this episode at laurahornart.com/the podcast/119. And if listening to these episodes has got you all fired up and you want to jump into using your sketchbooks and creating some material and resources that you can draw on in your creative practice, then I encourage you to sign up for the Creative Elements Challenge. Head on over to classes.laurahornart.com/courses/creative-elements-challenge. Remember, the challenge starts on the 10th of February. That's next week. We'll be chatting about it on the podcast. I'd love for you to join in, and I'd love for you to tune in to next week's episode. I hope you have a wonderful week.